Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. I'll give out our number, but you might want to hold off until a little bit later in the show or until you hear something you definitely want to respond to, because we're going to do an interview with a well-known rabbi out of New York. But our phone number is 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. We welcome the growth of our audience now in Memphis, Tennessee. We're now up to 8 cities, 5 nights a week for an hour live. So welcome to our brand new listeners in Memphis. We've recently added New Orleans and Knoxville, Tennessee. So it's good to have you guys tuning in to Bob Enyart Live. Okay, now we're going to go to Rabbi Shmuley Boteya. Rabbi, thank you for joining us again.
It's a pleasure, Bob. Congratulations on Memphis.
Hey, I appreciate that. Rabbi, I'd like to start with this latest terrorist attack in Tel Aviv with 23 murdered and more than 100 injured. I want you to know that the Christians at my church, at Denver Bible Church, we grieve with all the victims of terrorism, with the Jews who have suffered at the hands of these suicide bombers.
Well, let me thank you. Israel, of course, remarkably, does not enjoy the sympathy of the nations of the world who shockingly continue to see 5 million Israeli Jews as the tormentors of 500 million Arabs.
Right.
This is especially shocking in light of the fact that, sadly, the Palestinians' main contribution to world civilization is the homicide bomber.
Mm.
I mean, this is not only the greatest propaganda coup in the history
right.
of any nation, but it's deeply immoral. So we never speak about Israeli victims as innocent civilians who were murdered by cold-blooded killers. We see them rather as victims of some sort of war. We speak about a cycle of violence. This is absolutely deeply immoral. These
right.
were innocent people who were targeted for murder by cold-blooded killers.
Right. Those terms are despicable. In World War II, when we were fighting Hitler, every bomb we dropped in Germany was not part of the cycle of violence. It was part of the evidence to right the wrong that had been committed.
Well, that's a very good analogy. And look, sadly, the Muslim world, which once had a glorious history of religious tolerance, they took Jews in after the Spanish Inquisition, they took Jews in from Portugal, they were at the forefront of agricultural and scientific achievement of the whole world. They are sadly disintegrating. 50% of Muslims in the world, according to the United Nations Development Report, are illiterate. They now rank only slightly above sub-Saharan Africa in economic poverty.
Right.
And one is amazed that rather than helping their own people who are so desperately in need of education, of economic prosperity, they've decided to muster all their energy simply to hate Israel.
Right. It's a great tragedy. Have you speculated or have you heard any about why this repeated targeting of Russians in Israel? This part of Tel Aviv was mostly an immigrant part of town, and many, the majority are Russian laborers, very, you know, relatively low on the economic scale, that have now been targeted 3 times. Any speculation on why they're being singled out?
Well, nearly 20 Russian teenagers were murdered outside the Dolphinarium, the discotheque, about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was particularly targeted or whether they were all congregating. I don't personally think that this time it was Russian Jews who were being targeted. I know the area in Tel Aviv well because it's the site of the old bus terminal, and I was a rabbinical student in Israel for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go through there probably once or twice a week. Now, I think it was chosen because it's one of the It's full of restaurants, cafes, stores. It's
extremely
packed.
Busy, right?
It's extremely busy, and look, 23 people died.
You know,
but people also don't understand is when we say 23, prorated for the United States, we're talking, 2,000-3,000.
Yeah, because the population is so small.
So small.
NPR, National Public Radio, and Terry Gross, are you familiar with her show, Fresh Air?
I am not.
Okay. Well, she did an interview after the bombing, aired on Monday, with an Israeli aid worker who was there helping the wounded right on the scene. And She asked her why this repeated target of Russian Jews, because that's what was being said. And she asked, Terry Gross on NPR said, is it because they're taking low-end jobs from Arabs? And the aid workers said, no, what we believe is the Palestinians are very concerned. They want an Arab majority, and they want to stop Russian immigration and reduce the birth rate, discourage Russians from living in Israel. So they're intentionally targeting Russians.
Well, you know, I would be suspect of that explanation because even now, the numbers of Russian Jews who are immigrating to Israel are you know, nothing to what they were. It's already been mostly completed. And whether or not they would attack Russian Jews or anyone else, if their intention is to send a message back to people living in Russia, this is a dangerous place, they'll get that message no matter who's being bombed.
Yeah,
no,
that,
I think this was
good...
chosen because it was an easy target.
Okay.
I mean, they would much rather bomb the Knesset. They would much rather bomb an Israeli Air Force base.
And that's
just
a lot harder to do.
They're so heavily guarded, they can't get in.
Right. Of course, if that was right, then that would be another example of ethnic cleansing an effort on the part of the Palestinians.
Oh, but it is an example of ethnic cleansing. The Arabs have tried for 80 years to cleanse the Middle East of Jews. And what people don't realize is that in the history of the world, there has never been a Palestinian state. America's greatest author ever, Mark Twain, wrote in 1888 when he was traveling through the Holy Land that it was so desolate that for 13 days he didn't even see another living soul. There were some Arabs and there were some Jews. It was only when the Jews started to emigrate from Europe and they cleared the marshes, and they cleared the swamps, and they built the cities, the Arabs started moving in because the standard of living was so much higher than it was in the Arab world, just as it is today.
Yeah, when the Palestinians claim that Israel took their country, they never had a constitution. There was a Palestinian leader. There was no Palestinian currency.
Well, there was no such thing as Palestine. I mean,
no.
Palestine was a word that the British started to use when they conquered the area from the Ottoman Empire after the First World War. But there has never, ever been a Palestinian state. And let's even remember that Gaza and the West Bank, which the Palestinians are now saying is occupied territory, these were conquered by Israel from Egypt and from Jordan, not from Palestine.
Right, exactly.
And amazingly, let's also remember that in 1964, when the PLO was founded, and was founded to liberate the land from the Jews, this was before the Six-Day War, before these territories were even conquered.
Yeah.
So the PLO was never founded to clear Gaza and the West Bank of Israelis and to create a Palestinian state. It was created to destroy Israel, and that has remained their intention ever since.
Yeah, my family and I, we've been to Israel on three occasions in the last 5 years, and including during the current Intifada. But one of the things we learned was from the Golan Heights, for what, a couple decades, Syria shelled farmers down below in the Galilee. And since Israel's had the Golan, not one shot has been fired from that mountain. We'll be right back after this. Listener-supported radio right here on Bob and Yart Live, and we will get back to the show in just a couple minutes. But I want to thank all of you out there in Radio Land who have helped support this show so that we're marching ever onward. We've been on the air for 10 years, and this show is an outgrowth of the ministry of Denver Bible Church. I get to pastor that ministry. And if you live in Colorado, of course, we invite you to come on out and visit us Sunday morning, Sunday evening. Look us up on the web, denverbiblechurch.org. If you're anywhere else around the country, you can get involved with what we do. You can call us up. Well, you can call up Bob and Yart Live anytime during the week, 1-800-8-N-YART. That's 1-800-836-9278. You could get our materials on the Bible, both the Hebrew Scriptures and the Christian Scriptures. Why is it that we believe in the Bible? If you are not a believer, if you don't believe that the Bible is the Word of God, if you do not believe that Moses actually spoke with God and gave to man God's law, if you don't believe those things, then let us know, and we will send you a video for free that contains evidence of why we have been persuaded that the Bible is true, and that certainly it's the bestseller of all time. The Bible is the number one bestseller of all time, and it's the single most influential book of all time. It's been translated into how many languages now? Well, over 2,000 languages. All or most of the Bible has been translated into over 2,000 languages. And in about another 30 years, every language currently in use will have a copy of the Bible available in their own tongue. That's extraordinary. That means that since the Tower of Babel, the Bible will be the first universally translated text. And that's fitting, since it's the number one bestseller of all time. So if you're curious about what gives so many people passion to say that these scriptures that have been around for so long are so important, if you want to know more about them, please call us up at 1-800-836-9278. And again, if you don't believe, let us know that, and we'll send you a videotape called Mount Moriah. We'll send you that videotape for free. If you already believe, guys, then we're all on the same team. And, of course, whether you want some of our videotapes, audio tapes, or literature, we'll let you know the prices. You can look up our materials on the web. Go to kgov.com, kgov.com. And we are back with, you're listening to Bob and Yart Live, and we're speaking with Rabbi Shmuley Botia. Rabbi, you've got a book out, and you and I have talked in the past. I think I was a guest on your show. You have a talk show, right?
I do, and you were not only a guest on my show, you were one of the most interesting guests. To be sure, you and I disagreed vociferously,
yeah,
but you maintained your ground passionately and articulately, and well, you impressed me greatly. I hope that we'll have you back on a lot.
Well, thank you. That would be enjoyable. And I recall that we disagreed about the death penalty to some extent, although there's no doubt there are many issues that we would passionately agree upon.
No doubt, of course.
But let me ask you...
And also let me reinforce my thanks on behalf of Jews everywhere for the... And really, the incredible support shown in the State of Israel by the Christian community, especially at Israel's most perilous time of need.
When we went back this last time, our tour guide, all the tour guides in Israel are trained by the State of Israel and registered, and her name is Joni, and she shed tears when she first met us. She said we were her first group in 1 year because of the dearth of travel and tourism in Israel because of the terrorism.
Right, and it's devastating the economy, and people don't know how to feed their families. It's just horrible.
Yeah,
and remember, Israel doesn't have oil. Israel made the desert bloom through the sweat and tears of its pioneers. Mm. We didn't dig a hole into the ground and discover 25% of the world's oil reserves the way Saudi Arabia did.
Yeah, that's a good point. Years ago, I went across country to a church, Calvary Chapel in California, Chuck Smith, and one of the things that attracted me to that church was they decided to have a fundraiser. You know, churches are always having fundraisers. But they had a fundraiser, and they bought an ambulance and gave it to the hospital in Jerusalem. And that, you know, when I look at the Christian community through the centuries, there have been so many despicable things. In fact, great evils have been perpetrated on the Jews by Christians, or at least people claiming to be Christians. But I'm proud to be part of a new generation of Christians that do have a love for Israel and for the Jews.
Well, look, in modern times, Jews and Christians have become incredible brothers. And it's also so nice to see that the suspicion that existed up until very recently of the Jewish community towards especially evangelical Christians has largely subsided. Not just subsided, I mean, it's undeniable that Israel's greatest friends in the United States today are conservative Christians and conservative politicians. I just published an essay in the Jerusalem Post. I do a weekly column there, and it's Israel's leading English daily newspaper, where I said that even as a Jew, as an Orthodox Jew, I would support President George W. Bush for president of the United States over Joseph Lieberman, who's a great man, a very moral man, and one of this country's most distinguished senators, and an Orthodox Jew. But I would support President Bush because Lieberman is now taking this sort of neutral position on Israel. He was just there, and he went to the Palestinian territories, and he spoke about how the terrible human suffering there. Now, of course, there's terrible human suffering among the Palestinians. It's horrible. It's abysmal. But what he should have said is they've sadly brought this upon themselves. I mean, if anyone would have visited Berlin in 1945 after the Allies had bombed Germany for four straight years, would they have said, look at the terrible suffering that America caused the Germans? No. I mean, the Germans voted in Hitler democratically.
Right.
They voted in the greatest monster in the history of the world.
Right.
And they paid a price for it. So these pronouncements by Lieberman, and also the fact that he's removed his support from moving the Israeli embassy, the American embassy in Israel, from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and he was the instigator of the move initially,
right,
as soon as he became the vice presidential candidate with Al Gore. I mean, all these things. I wrote an article saying, I don't know why Jews would automatically give Lieberman their support. President Bush is a far better, greater supporter of Israel as it currently stands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm actually, you know, even though I would agree Bush is stronger on doing what's right in Israel, even his position, he should be able to look at Arafat as a terrorist and the Palestinian Authority as a terrorist organization, and that organization should be part of his war on terror. But for some reason, with Bush, he has a soft spot in his heart for Arafat.
Well, I'll tell you, I actually greatly admire our president, and I'm an independent. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, so you know, coming from me, it's saying a lot.
And I'm not
I don't think he has a soft spot for Arafat. He's refused to meet Arafat, even though Clinton met with Arafat more than any other world leader 16 times.
Yeah.
I think that what George Bush has is Colin Powell. And Colin Powell is a good man, but he is I wouldn't go so far as to say he's an appeaser, but he does not believe in American force. He believes that war is a last resort, and we none of us want to see bloodshed. But come on, you don't give a guy like Saddam Hussein a second chance. Saddam Hussein is a congenital liar. You don't give a guy like Kim Jong-il a second chance.
Well,
another congenital liar.
You
know, we had the Jimmy Carters of this world appeasing these guys already.
Yeah, Rabbi, but let me ask you. Now, Saddam Hussein, he has, just 3 years ago, he gave Abu Nidal basically a base of operations in Baghdad. And they're a terrorist group that's killed or injured 900 people, bombings at airports, and just a vicious terrorist group. And he gives money to the family of each suicide bomber, maybe $15,000. And I'd call all that state-sponsored terrorism.
Of course.
Now, we have overwhelming evidence that Arafat, Yasser Arafat, does the same, that he helps fund the building of the bombs for the suicide terrorists. And as in that role, he is a terrorist leader, and yet there's this double standard. See, I believe that our government should say that Yasser Arafat is a terrorist leader, and he needs to be arrested and tried as
Yasser
a terrorist.
Arafat is not only a terrorist. He is the founder of all modern terrorism. He is the one who initiated the hijacking of civilian airliners in the late 1960s, in 1968. Yasser Arafat, the CIA has him on tape, this is undisputed, ordering the murder of two American diplomats in the Sudan. One was the highest-ranking African-American diplomat in the whole State Department. These two people were beaten. They were taken hostage. They were beaten so badly by Palestinian terrorist murderers that they could only be identified by their dental records. There was a CIA wiretap of Arafat ordering these murders, let alone, I mean, those are murders of Americans, let alone all those murders of Israelis. People can go to the IDF website, the Israeli Defense Forces website, www.idf.il, and you can actually see the documents, they're translated from the Arabic into English, of the Palestinian Authority distributing money to the suicide bombers. There is a direct link, and these are documents that were captured by Israel when they went into Jenin in April 2002.
Well, in the cache of evidence that came out of when you guys surrounded Arafat's compound, and when that happened, and Arafat is surrounded, and our government is pressuring Israel to back off. And there's such overwhelming evidence that Arafat is a murderer, a terrorist. In fact, as you pointed out, I think correctly, could be called the father of modern terrorism. Our government should have, if our government did not equivocate, and if we were more clearly able to think right versus wrong, we would say, congratulations, you got him trapped, now arrest him and try him. But instead, George W. Bush, he pressures Israel to back off.
Well, look, I think in the Bush administration, you have Bush, who is a born-again Christian, great, and I think he's a very special man. You have Dick Cheney, and you have especially Donald Rumsfeld. I consider Rumsfeld, perhaps the greatest living American. And they're tough guys, and they hate Arafat. They know exactly what he is. But you also have Colin Powell, and I don't think the administration thinks that it can...
Yeah, but we can't blame all... Colin Powell is pulling the strings.
The whole State Department is not in sync with
this
administration.
Well, I agree with that.
And I think that President Bush probably feels that Powell's resignation would be a major blow.
But you know what?
Turned right.
You know what? If some... I don't care about that political calculation, because if you got Hitler, if you got Osama bin Laden, you don't say, well, you know, the political price is too great to arrest and try this guy.
Look what Colin Powell said recently, which was astonishing. You know, Powell has been a very big critic of Israel's targeting assassinating terrorist leaders. This is how Israel's fighting its war against terror. It goes in and it finds these terror leaders and it kills them, and they deserve to die. They're murderers. When the United States used a drone and a Hellfire missile in Yemen not long ago to kill four al-Qaeda terrorists, he was asked by reporters, isn't this exactly what Israel's doing? And he said, no, the two are completely different. Now, where does that make sense? So,
right.
The United States is using the exact same tactic, and it's good that we are.
Terrorist leaders
should be hunted down and killed, you know, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I was proud of our government for what we accomplished in Afghanistan. Now, I'm quite a critic. I'm not a Republican, and I'm quite a critic of our government for not doing right more consistently. But I was very proud of what we did in Afghanistan. It was awesome. And also in Yemen with a Predator drone without putting a single American life at stake in that operation, and to be able to target and kill terrorist leaders, that's great. That's how you defeat the enemy, not by giving in to whatever type of territorial demands or self-determination or demands for negotiation. When you do that with terrorists, you inspire more terrorism. That's common sense 101. And I have this love-hate relationship with our foreign policy right now. We've got this war on terror, but we're hypocrites, and we help to harbor Yasser Arafat.
Well, you know, and it goes beyond that. Bush is much better than Clinton was. I mean, you know, I don't care what Clinton did with Monica Lewinsky. You know, I care about his treatment of Israel. Clinton was a very good friend of the Jews, and he was almost too good a friend. He wanted to have a peace settlement, whether or not it was going to be in Israel's interest. He forced Israel into these stupid Oslo Accords, Oslo I, Oslo II, which was the greatest catastrophe in the history of the Jewish state. Israel was weakened to a point where even its greatest warrior, Ariel Sharon, can no longer defend it. I mean, what people don't realize in hearing about the incessant suicide attacks against Israeli civilians, proportionately, Israel has now lost, in the space of 2 years, more civilians than all the soldiers the United States had killed in Vietnam. Mm. This is how many civilians have died, not
soldiers.
That's
when you compare the populations and you make it proportional.
Correct.
Right.
The United States lost 55,000 soldiers.
Right.
And proportionately, Israel has now lost more civilians. I mean, these are numbers that no country would tolerate.
Right. Right, of course. And so... We do our best. In fact, Denver Bible Church, we're considering right now placing an ad in the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News, basically in defense of Israel. It's a bit of a controversial thing in America with our peculiar IRS regulations, and lawyers tell you to tread softly. But Christians need to continue, not back off. And when the media compares the number of Jews who've died and the number of Palestinians, and they make it like a football game, and the Jews are guilty of piling on because more Palestinians are dying, it's just tragic the way the media in this country presents this crisis. Rabbi, we're going to the news. Would you be able to stay on to the other side?
No, Bob, I wish I could.
Okay,
but,
no problem.
In the interest of being...
Let me talk to you during the news. Hold on. All right? Enyartbob, Enyartbob, at AOL.com. Okay, great. Thanks, Rabbi. Bye. All right, I know this is a commercial break, but I was talking to the rabbi. Sometimes our audience members, you guys got to suffer through live radio. This is live radio with a minimal staff. And our staff members, we only pay them, what, $28, $29 an hour? Right? They're all laughing right now. A week. The one said a week, and the other said, I haven't got paid yet. Well, how long have you been? You just started, right? Well, 5 months ago? No. Well, talk to somebody in payroll. There must be a clerical error. Yeah, there is a clerical error. Our last payroll clerk quit because we didn't pay her. We're a shoestring operation here. Small operation, volunteer staff. Now, my 17-year-old son, Nathaniel, I don't know, we can't call you volunteer anymore, right? No, because we now pay him. He needed to get paid because he had bills. How could he have bills? He's 17 and he lives at home. But he has bills, so we've started paying my son, and he's such a great son and a great worker that we're happy to pay him. And so Cheryl went out to work at the local grocery store as a checker so we could afford to pay Nathaniel. No, I'm only kidding. I'm trying to make Nathaniel feel guilty for actually getting a paycheck. No, he's just the greatest son, and we're thrilled to pay him. And I hope someday could pay him 10 times more. Although he'll probably be on to his own career, right? His own life. Leave dad in the dust. Go ahead and get married. Have kids. That'll all be exciting. So anyway, if you can help out, call us 1-800-8-ENYARD. Now, Rabbi Shmuley Botia, we talked briefly during the news break at the bottom of the hour there, and the rabbi said that he'd love to stay on. He invited me to come on his show in New York in 2 weeks, so we'll do that. We've got an important date coming up, January 18th. That's a deadline we've got here, so it had to be after that. So let's arrange that, okay, just after that. After the 18th, and his daughter was next to him when we called him to get him on the line before the show. His daughter answered the phone. How old did she sound? Maybe eight? Eight, and he had to do her homework with her, one part of her homework, and it's 9:30 in New York. So he said, Bob, please tell the audience, I'm sorry, I just got to go and help my daughter with her homework. And I said, by all means, go. What are you wasting your time for talking to me? So let's go to the phones, 1-800-8-ENYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Is this, this is Leslie, this is Leslie Hanks?
It is.
It said Leslie H.
Oh.
You're famous, Leslie.
At least you know my name, huh?
That's right. You've been involved, one of the leaders of Colorado Right to Life for some time.
I have.
Yeah.
And I'm calling to see if you would like to, it's a little bit off topic, but to see if you'd like to let your listeners know about the March for Life that's coming up on January 18th.
Absolutely. Now, why is the March for Life always in sort of mid-January?
Well, because of the infamous Roe v. Wade decision, which this year, ironically or sadly, we are going to be commemorating the 30th anniversary of the assault on the unborn child in our nation and the deaths of probably over 50 million innocent unborn babies.
30 years of legal child killing in America.
That's right.
Okay, and let me ask you, let me give you a pop quiz.
Okay.
Okay, this is...
I hope I can pass.
Well, we'll see. This is the 30th anniversary of Roe v. Wade.
Right.
There was... That was not the only decision handed down that day by the Supreme Court. There was a second decision. Do you remember the name of that one?
Oh, I do. Doe v. Bolton.
Doe v. Bolton. Now, that's impressive because when I ask liberals and liberal pro-aborts, they have no idea. So tell the audience about Doe v. Bolton, what that decision said.
Well, that decision said that I believe that abortions could not be restricted because it was allowing for the abortion at any time for the health of the mother.
Right.
And, of course, their definition of health, a bad hair day fits right in there nicely.
Yeah, right. There's no standard whatsoever to their the line they drew about you can get an abortion for your health if you're just in a bad mood, if you hate your ex-husband or your ex-boyfriend.
Exactly.
If you decided you want to be bisexual, whatever. If you don't want to miss an exam at school, you can kill your child.
Right.
So Roe v. Wade, it's legal to kill your baby, and maybe there could be some restrictions, but Doe v. Bolton, there can be no restrictions if it interferes with the health of the mother.
Right. For any reason or no reason, she can take her baby's life.
Right.
And that's been so troubling, and so one of the biggest difficulties in passing decent legislation is that, for instance, the last time the partial birth abortion legislation passed, the Supreme Court said that it was unconstitutional because it didn't allow for the health of the mother exception. And even though the American Medical Association would say that there's never any legitimate reason for a partial birth abortion to be performed, if a mother had a health crisis going on and the baby was in the third trimester, obviously you would
take
do a cesarean and spare the baby's life. You wouldn't just stab the baby in the back of the head and suck its brains out.
Right. You're not going to do a vaginal delivery breech and stop when you're almost done long enough just to kill the baby.
Right.
Right. It's all a scam, and it's just so despicable what our government is doing. And I don't even want to talk about National Right to Life when they go along with some of that. Some of those exceptions.
It's very, very disturbing. I got an interesting email from a gentleman named Chuck Baldwin. I don't know if you ever see his
on work. The internet, he has a
and he put out
newsletter.
A piece on Mr. Frist, the new Senate chairman, majority leader, and talked about a lot of conflicts of interest that Mr. Frist has, one being very egregious, that he has huge stock holdings in Columbia HCA Medical Hospital facilities, and they, of course, do abortions. So right off the bat, that's not a good sign. But, it goes on down the line listing numerous things. So, like, he championed the campaign of Mr. Thatcher to be the Surgeon General under Clinton. And
he was a radical pro-abort.
Yes, exactly. So it doesn't sound like Mr. Frist is all that much of a pro-life positive force.
Well, unfortunately, the pro-life, even Christian Republicans we have in this country, pretty much all love appointing pro-abortion judges whenever they get the opportunity. So we're sort of stuck.
And the thing that I just found so disturbing is that even though there's all these reasons to not feel very good about Mr. Frist, National Right to Life has given him a 100% rating.
Well, what rating did they give George W.?
Probably the same.
They gave him a 100% pro-life rating when he filled the Texas Supreme Court with pro-aborts.
I hear you.
He just packed it with pro-aborts. Doesn't that count for anything?
I don't know.
How could you get 100%? Couldn't they say 99.9% pure, except he ruined the Texas Supreme Court?
Well, I will have to tell you this. Colorado Right to Life has always been the thorn in the side of National Right to Life. We rarely agree with them on very many things. And when our president goes and sits on their board meetings, they never agree on.
Well, the NRLC, that it's really the National Republican Lobbying Committee. It's the only, it's got to be the only group that the Republican National Committee gives money to.
This could be.
What do they give, $700,000 a year, during an election cycle to National Right to Life?
I'm not sure, but I have heard that accusation.
Yeah, it's right about, it's somewhere around that dollar amount. And since when would the Republican Party give money to a lobbying group? Since when? It's normally the other way around.
You know, I got a call tonight from the Republican Party. They were just, thanking me so much for my help in the past and wanted to know if I'd like to give a little more. And I said, nope, not until I see you folks doing the right thing on the life issue.
Good for you, Leslie.
They never do, but I keep
Leslie Hanks, good. Our studio audience is applauding you.
Oh, good.
Hey, Leslie, so tell us, the march is Saturday.
January 18th.
January 18th.
2003, west steps of the state capitol at 1:30 in the afternoon.
You know, last year I think you had Dan Kaplis speak.
We did.
He was tremendous.
Thank you. Yeah, we really enjoyed having Dan.
He was just great. Now, who's speaking this year?
This year we are having Jill Stanek. And Jill, that's not a name that a lot of people will recognize. You probably know it.
Hey, Leslie.
Yeah?
I need to apologize to our listeners who are in other cities other than Denver.
Okay.
You know, I just have this expectation that they're all going to fly here to attend our March for Life.
They probably won't.
But in reality, they could go to their own capital
absolutely
that day, Saturday, January 18th, and go to a march there.
Absolutely.
Nearer their own hometown. Okay, so anyway, who's our Denver speaker?
Well, Denver speaker is Jill Stanek. She's not a Denver native. She'll be coming in from Chicago, Illinois.
Did she what that name? Now she had to do with basically reporting abortionists to the babies born live and
absolutely
alive, and then they let the baby die.
Right. She worked for Christ Hospital, which is on the south side of Chicago.
Chicago,
a town called Evergreen Park. Ironically, I was born there, and she was witnessing these babies that were born.
Did you say Christ Hospital?
Pardon?
What hospital?
Christ Hospital.
Jesus.
Well, they don't have the word Jesus in it. It's just called Christ Hospital, but I'm sure that's, you know, the derivation. But
yeah, right.
Anyway, these babies that are born by virtue of mifepristone medication that's given mid-trimester, then these babies are born premature and obviously will not survive without their mother. Unless they're given some medical care. Well, Jill kept witnessing that these babies would be left in soiled laundry rooms to just die with no medical care whatsoever.
To die, basically starved to death.
Exactly.
And when was this that she saw these things?
Well, we flew her to Colorado twice last year to testify about her experiences when we were trying to pass a piece of legislation called the Born Alive Infant Protection Act.
And
To our shame, Colorado State Senate, under the Democratic control last year, they made sure that that bill died in the Senate committee before it ever, you know, saw the light of day.
What a shame.
But subsequently, it was passed by Congress, and she did stand with President Bush, who, to his credit, did sign it. Hmm. So she will be coming in and speaking.
All right. Well, Leslie, what's the time?
1:30 p.m.
1:30, January 18th. It's probably about the same time all around the country. Call your local Right to Life group and go on out and visit whatever city you're in or have your own. Right? Hey, Leslie, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you very much for letting me take the time to mention our event.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
God
Bob.
Bless you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. In Colorado Springs, Kirk, speak your mind.
Yeah, I had a question about the death penalty.
Yes, sir.
And I was looking up scripture and stuff, and I'm trying to, you know, because remember they didn't kill King David after he tried to hide.
You're right. So did God repeal the death penalty in the Old Testament? We'll be right back and ask Kirk that question. Hey, Bob Enyart here. It's a commercial break. And unlike most shows, during the commercials, we slip in some programming. So if you've got any question or comment about the death penalty, well, this is Death Penalty Central right here, Bob Enyart Live. You convict them and we'll execute them. Well, if you give us the governmental authority to do so. In fact, people say execution is too expensive. Denver Bible Church will donate, you know, whatever is needed, the rope, the stones, the bullets, whatever. If some guy rapes and murders innocent women and he's been justly convicted, yeah, we have our elder board. Each elder will take turns. So how many elders do we have? 5, 6 elders? So there's half a dozen. We'll do it for free. So that'll reduce the cost. Actually, Kirk is asking a good question. David committed adultery. That was a capital crime. And murder. That was a capital crime. So why was he not put to death? Well, for one, he was the king. Who's going to do it? But that's beside the point. I'm going to ask Kirk seriously. Kirk, why wasn't David put to death? And what does that mean? did God repeal the death penalty law that God gave in the Old Testament? So we'll find out. Kirk's answer, we'll talk about that. But if you're interested in this topic and you'd like to have strong answers, well, give us a call at 1-800-8-NER, and you could order our death penalty video, God and the Death Penalty, New Testament Support for Capital Punishment. God and the Death Penalty, New Testament Support for Capital Punishment. It's really an interesting video. It's 2 hours of powerful, powerful evidence for the resurrection, for the death penalty. Well, of course, that was a bit of a slip, but Christ was first put to death. We've made this point 100 times on the air, that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And if there's something wrong with the death penalty, like liberal Christians have been convinced that the death penalty is bad, well, if that's true, then there was something wrong with God the Father demanding that his son be put to death in order for justice to be, the demands of justice to be met. So anyway, it's been a fun commercial with you guys. And if you're interested in the death penalty, give us a call, order the video. All right, now going back to Colorado Springs, and Kirk, you're right. King David committed adultery, and that's a capital crime, according to God, in the Old Testament. And then he committed murder to try to cover up his crime, which many murders are in an effort to cover up a sexual crime. So what do you make, Kirk, of God saying that David did not have to be put to death?
I know before him, King Saul didn't listen to God, and you know, and God got rid of him and put David in there, and David repented. But it doesn't matter, you know, if someone repents after they murder someone, you know,
you're still supposed to be executed.
Yeah, so that's right. why I'm, you know,
So God killed Saul, but he did not kill David.
Yeah, and Saul didn't do his well. I mean, Saul didn't listen. You know, he said go take the land, and he took the land or whatever, and then he came back and took all the treasure and everything.
Well,
and
Saul became very evil and rebellious, and God killed him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and so I do believe in the death penalty, but then again, and I'm like, well.
Well, let me ask you this: do you believe in it just because it makes sense, or do you also know that in the Bible God commanded that every murderer shall surely be put to death?
Yeah, no, that's what I believe. I believe
you know that.
You know,
good.
And then some people say, well, Matthew, you know, 5:38, it says an eye for an eye, a tooth for tooth, but Jesus says turn the other cheek, and I'm saying that's on personal revenge. That doesn't mean that the law cannot, prosecute. It means,
well, that's a perfect answer, right? Because Christ was talking about the attitude of the individual and the believer.
Exactly. He's not talking about the law.
He wasn't talking about
all the murders go.
He wasn't talking about governmental principles.
No.
But also, he said, "You have heard that it was said, 'Thou shalt not commit adultery,' but I say unto you."
Yeah.
So did he repeal the law against adultery?
No.
And then he said, "You have heard that it was said to them of old, 'Thou shalt not murder,' but I say unto you." Did he repeal the law against murder?
No. And then Matthew,
of course not.
5:17 it says, "Don't think that I've come to do away with the law of Moses."
Right. Not at all. So anyway, the Christians who get tricked into that, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, but I say unto you, they're being deceived because they're not thinking. They're just accepting some mindless cliche. Oh, Jesus repealed the law against an eye for an eye. Okay, then how about against murder and adultery? Those are now legal? You can now commit those because that law is no longer in effect?
No, because then it also goes on further on that same thing, and it says that that the law will never be done away with.
What Jesus was doing there was he was not repealing those laws. He was giving the correct interpretation of them. Just because God said, "Thou shalt not murder," did not mean that you could be bitter unjustly in your heart toward someone as long as you didn't murder the guy. And just because God said, "Do not commit adultery," doesn't mean you could lust. And as long as you don't commit adultery, you're okay. Jesus said, "You have heard you have heard, do not murder, but I say unto you, don't even be angry without cause.
Yeah.
You have heard, do not commit adultery, but I say unto you, don't even lust. You have heard, an eye for an eye, but I say to you, forgive your enemy. Just because the government could punish a criminal doesn't mean that you have to have an attitude against forgiving your brother who's sorry.
Yeah, and then in Hebrews 13:8 it says Jesus Christ is the same today, yesterday, and forever. So if he was the same, you know, in Malachi 3:6 it says,
okay,
I do not change.
Okay, well, here's the deal. Then I want you to tell me, how is it that David was not put to death and the adulteress in the Gospel of John?
Well, in the Gospel of John, it said Jesus was writing something down, and I think what he was writing down was their sins on the ground.
Well, okay, let's go with David.
Okay.
Since I don't want to base our answer on guessing what he was writing.
Okay, I'm not really sure. I mean...
Okay. The Bible, did God give an earthly judge the latitude to forgive a murderer?
I don't think so. I think if you committed murder, you got to be...
God repeatedly said he must absolutely be put to death. Take no ransom for the life of a murderer. You have to execute him. That's what God said when he delegated authority to earthly government.
Okay.
Does God have the authority, the right, to suspend punishment for a murderer?
Yeah.
He does. So God could forgive David... And Jesus, being God, could forgive the adulteress. He doesn't have to repeal the death penalty law and execution in order to forgive someone. He's God. He has the authority to do that, and he never delegated the authority to show mercy to an earthly judge. Because an earthly judge has no standing to forgive a murderer. You could only forgive someone who sinned against you.
Yeah.
And every sin is against God. You know, the immediate victim and then God, because he made us and he owns us. And so an earthly judge has no right to forgive a murderer. So that does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, I was just trying to find, you know, stuff in the New Testament that, you know, helps support my
argument. The death penalty?
Yeah, about the death penalty.
Well, how about Jesus when he said that, excuse me, how about Jesus when he was talking about the law? And he said, why do you follow your own tradition and ignore God when God commanded, let him be put to death? That's a quote from Jesus.
And that was in Matthew, or that was in Matthew, wasn't it?
No, I think Luke, let me find that for you. And how about, remember the two on the cross?
Yeah.
The two on the cross and the one repented and became righteous?
Yeah, he said, you'd be with me in paradise today.
Right, and he said that he was receiving his just punishment. And he was repentant, he was forgiven.
Yeah.
And if he's receiving his just punishment, what does that tell us?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it tells us that, and God put that statement in the Bible. Remember the Apostle Paul in the book of Acts?
Okay.
He was on trial for his life. And he supported the death penalty, and he said, if I have done anything worthy of death, I do not object to dying. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember now that you brought that. Now that, you know. You
yeah,
that.
And Romans 13:3-4 says that God gave the governing authorities, he gave them the obligation to use the sword to execute the criminal and bring vengeance, wrath, and terror against the criminal.
Yeah.
That's Revelation 13.
Revelation 13?
Yeah. And I'm looking for the other verse while we're talking. I think it's in Luke 7, but I'll find
it. A lot of people say, well, Jesus was all about love and this and that. And I want to know, where was it in the Bible? Because you were talking about the other day when Jesus was talking about he couldn't wait for the fire and the kettle to start.
Oh, to be kindled already.
Yeah, I heard that, but you didn't give the verse, and I was like, oh, man, where is that?
Oh, I'm terrible, aren't I? How about Luke 12:49? Jesus said, I came to send fire on the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled.
12:49?
Yeah, Luke 12:49. And then he also talked about, what else did he talk about? He talked about, he said, bring him here. Now, he was telling a parable, but it was about himself. And he said, bring them here, those enemies of mine, who would not obey me and slay them before me. So you can look up these verses on your own, right? Just get a concordance, go on the internet, and just look them up.
Okay, and
it's
Jesus,
not hard.
He didn't rebuke Peter. Remember when they came to arrest him?
Yeah.
And he cut off the high priest's slave's ear, and he rebuked him when they couldn't cast out a demon and they had unbelief, but he didn't rebuke them for standing up, you know.
Well, he didn't want them to, Peter, to do that at
that
time.
Yeah, but he didn't rebuke them when they were standing up, you know, to arrest someone. Well, I'm not saying that you should go out and...
No, but Jesus didn't want Peter to do that, so I would say that's not a good argument.
Well, okay.
All right. Hey, Kirk, we have a video on this called God and the Death Penalty, mm-hmm. New Testament Support for Capital Punishment. So if you're inclined, you have money, you want to learn about it, give us a call and order it.
Okay.
All right? Money-back guarantee. If not satisfied. But we'll probably be satisfied with your money, so. No. Actually, so, Kirk, check it out, and then if you do watch the video, call us up and tell us what you think.
Okay.
I'm going to put you on hold and go to Gary in Granger, Indiana. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, Bob. Grace and peace from God our Father.
Thank you.
You had mentioned earlier tonight about you putting an ad in the paper for, like, Right to Life or something, and
yeah.
You were talking about iffy about IRS regulations. You probably did not know that the Catholic Church is not registered with the IRS as a 501c3, yet because of the First Amendment, the IRS and liberal judges acknowledge that they have no jurisdiction over them.
Now, when you say that,
yeah.
do you mean that every local Roman Catholic Church is not incorporated and is not a 501c3?
The
10,000 around the country.
I'm assuming from what I've read. I don't know but I'm assuming everyone is not.
Gary, I would assume that's wrong.
Okay.
That's my assumption.
Mm-hmm.
But
well,
if it were true, it would be in the headlines with all the lawsuits and the Boston Archdiocese going bankrupt.
Well.
And then being an unusual case because they're not registered.
Well.
So I wouldn't trust that information unless I heard it very authoritatively.
Well, I've just read a book about it, and this guy that did the research, he had a video. You can look it up at hushmoney.org. And
Now I'm sure that guy believes that no Roman Catholic Church is incorporated. But
you're familiar with him?
No, I'm not. But
okay.
He wrote a book about it and has a video, I'm sure he's convinced, but it doesn't mean that's right. You know, we meet people all the time that are convinced of all kinds of things, like we didn't go to the moon, for example, and Elvis
is
alive.
The taxes started in 1917, but the church was not included as being eligible as a 501c3 until like 1952. And before that, people would make a contribution to a church. It was tax deductible. My wife's Catholic. We go to the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And our contributions are tax deductible.
Have you asked the Monsignor, the priest there, if your church is incorporated in a 501c3?
No, but I will.
Yeah,
I'll
why don't
you?
And then call us back and tell us. It's not too hard to get through.
Okay.
All right, Gary?
All right.
I'm eager to hear. I want to know.
Okay. Look up that hushmoney.org and get good information there, too.
Well, thank you for calling.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate that. Now, by the way, Mark chapter 7... Mark chapter 7, Jesus, he was rebuking the Pharisees, and he said, "You reject the commandment of God for your own tradition. For Moses said, honor father and mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death." Now, that's Jewish law. But you say it's Jewish law given by God. In fact, Jesus is the one who gave the law to Moses. So Jesus rebuked them because they blew off the commandment of God for their own ideas. And one of the commands of God for Israel was that if somebody cursed his father or mother, he should be put to death. And Jesus said, "How dare you ignore God's commands for your own tradition?" And this is Bob Benyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.